Welcome to the Education Innovators Podcast. I'm Eric Byron, and it's an honor to host this show where we get to hear from talented educators who are willing to share their stories of the incredible things they are doing in learning environments all over the world. Colleen Kelly teaches college-level chemistry to fourth graders using comic books she created for this purpose. Here's a little soundbite just to tease you of what's coming in this episode.
For me, I think the power of this, what I've designed, is that comfort, right? Let's just take a book and get comfortable. Read it in the back of a car on a long trip or on the way to soccer practice. And so when I was envisioning this, these are all the kind of scenarios I wanted. I wanted it not to be a sterile environment. I wanted it to be joyful reading and joyful learning concomitantly.
Welcome, Colleen, to the Education Innovators Podcast. So I'm going to go ahead and just read a little bit from your bio.
Okay.
It's actually kind of a, well, you took the time to send me a bio. So let me make sure I honor that and share with our listeners here a little bit about you. So Colleen Kelly, the creator and founder of Kids Chemical Solutions, which is a comic book-based curriculum for students for all ages. So you started out at the University of Richmond, got a bachelor's degree in chemistry, fell in love with it, went on and got a PhD, and you were only 24 years old. That's just amazing to me. But anyway, and you stuck with it. You stayed with this through your whole career, 30 years teaching, in fact, teaching mostly, right, at the University of Arizona, teaching chemistry. And then you kind of got on this adventure trying to figure out why it's so hard for students to learn chemistry. And this is where, of course, the story gets interesting for me and why I invited you onto the podcast, because I want to hear about how you came up with this concept of comic books for teaching chemistry and what you're referring to, kind of the goal, I guess, would be molecular literacy. Colleen, I have to comment on the fact that you sent me a bio and you neglected to mention that you won an Emmy in 2023 for this comic book. And I guess there's a video that talks about it. Tell me about the Emmy and what actually you won there.
Okay, great. Yeah, so our local public media group heard wind about my comic books and the things I was doing teaching college level chemistry to kids. And they thought it might be an interesting story. So they came by and we set up times for them to video or take video of me, interview me, follow me around teaching kids. And they produced that for what's called our PBS, public broadcasting station here in the United States. So as part of that, and that composition was a documentary short that won a 2023 Emmy. So it was quite an unintentional Emmy, is the way I say it. I don't think very many people have unintentional Emmys, but certainly my goal and their goal was to promote my cause so that we can, you know, have this global phenomenon of molecular literacy. And I guess they did such a good job with it that people in the Academy of Arts and Sciences and Television thought it was worthy of an Emmy. So
that's awesome. I am so happy for you. And well, of course, I had the same reaction as soon as I saw what you were doing. I wanted to promote it too. So, so tell me about how this came about, though. So how did you end up? It sounds like it kind of started with some storytelling and then you ended up with comic books. But give me a little bit of the background on how this all came about.
Yeah, that starting and stopping, that's like a 25-ish year period. So it's kind of a long story, but the gist of it is when I was a new professor, a college professor teaching chemistry, I didn't expect students to not love chemistry as much as I did. I mean, I thought I'd walk into a classroom and they'd be just like ready to go. And this was going to be like the same energy at a basketball or football match or something like that. And quite the contrary. So in order to gain their interest, but also to connect with them and for them to understand some pretty complex concepts, I landed on storytelling as a mechanism to do that, and really brought in some characters from Disney. We talked a lot about Piglet being more like Florine and Pooh being more like Bromine, and really childish characters. And you know, I'm in an auditorium with 300 or so students who want to be doctors. They're very, very serious. They've gotten A's in everything all their lives. So, you know, how dare I bring in Winnie the Pooh characters? And they found that these were very helpful. And so once we realized that we can find some grounding in chemistry through storytelling, they were able to then envision what was happening a little bit easier. So over the years, I fell into some of my own characters and developed those, told those stories, and they were sticking. And they were sticking, but they weren't doing enough work. So towards the latter end of my career, I was realizing I'm still having pretty substantial failure rates. And I wasn't really understanding what was happening. And I thought, is there a way I can take this storytelling, these enormous failure rates? And nationally, we have a failure rate in college chemistry, somewhere around 60%. And failure means C, below, dropping out. So the number is pretty high. It doesn't mean just Fs. It means people who can't go on to continue a major because chemistry is required. So right. That's about 60% of your class in front of you for the last 30 years.
If you're a medical student, that's true, right? You can't.
It's very true. You're not going to become a doctor. So
right.
I thought, why do I have all these brilliant students who are enjoying my stories, but still we see this failure rate. It's not budging for 30 years. No matter how much I try, no matter how much we try at the higher ed level with extra tutoring, with mentorship, with research, we're trying so much and nothing is moving that number. So I really started looking at how they were communicating chemistry. And I realized that they were illiterate in the alphabet of science and they were faking it. They did not know their symbols for the elements. And that's what was tripping them up. It really wasn't the higher level conceptual thinking. These are brilliant students. It's the fact that they fundamentally were molecularly illiterate.
Right. And they didn't have the language for it.
They didn't have the language. And imagine if you're taught to read when you're 15 for at best a year, and then you don't see reading again until you get to college, and then you're asked to analyze Hemingway and write a 20-page paper on it. That's what we're doing to our students, with at best giving them a year of chemistry. But lately, it's not even been that because there's so many other electives because of the STEM initiative. You can fulfill science, your STEM requirement other ways.
Right.
So I really just started to look at, okay, well, I've got these great stories that are kind of youthful. And I know that neural pathways for things like learning to read, learning foreign languages, learning music are open around age 8. Let's try this out. Let's see if the alphabet of science is accessible to 8, 9, 10-year-olds through this medium that I've created, these stories. And so from there, I needed to create the comic books so that I could reach the younger ages. The concepts in my comic books are scaffolded against a college level course, though. So I took what I knew from college and put it in the comic books and then applied it to open neural pathways, and with huge success. So super happy about that.
So how do you measure that success?
Great. Yeah. So I've been in the classroom for the past 2 years in different classrooms. So I'm lucky enough to have a lot of friends who teach science, and they let me commandeer their fourth grade classroom for 14 weeks or their fifth grade classroom for a semester. I'm working in an after-school program right now in the public schools. So I've got a number of different mechanisms to do that. A lot of it is observation of how they are enjoying the comic books, the questions they ask. I also have a reading guide that goes along with the comic books. And a reading guide sounds very stale, but they're fun, funny questions with puzzles in them. And they're unprompted and not required, but I collect those and read. It's almost like journaling. So they're journaling as I read the comic books. And then luckily I can put my academician hat on and I've analyzed data from students for 30 years. So I can code for different coding kinds of learning. You know, is this inductive reasoning, deductive reasoning? What kind of, how are they applying this? Are they using, you know, if I look at it from the claims evidence reasoning standpoint, what claims are they making? What evidence are they showing? What is their reasoning? So I can quantitate that data. Again, luckily that's part of my career as a university professor. So I can apply that same skill set to the younger groups in these journal type puzzles and their writing.
Yeah. So how many, and I'm going to start with the periodic table, right? So there's what, 118 elements on the periodic table. How many characters, I know actually some of your characters are not just molecules, they're compounds and whatever, but how many characters have you developed at this point?
Oh boy. We don't have the periodic table full yet. I'd say probably about 50 characters.
50 characters. Okay. And what's the limiting factor in creating more? I mean, I know there's like 9 million or something, you know, potential, you know, compounds, but how many are you hoping to create and what's preventing that or slowing it down?
Oh, no, nothing's prohibiting it. It's really, we take them as needed. So as the storylines move forward, and there are some elements that are used more frequently than others when you're teaching a concept. There are some elements, you know, I joke about like the astatine or whatever. I'm like, I've never even seen it. So there's characters that really are present that could be present. I mean, if you're creating a movie, there's a lot of the elements that would be part of the crowd scene.
Right.
They might not have a leading role, but they might be part of the crowd and be like, oh, okay, you know, there's that one or that one. Yeah. Not to pick on astatine, but anyway, yeah. So we don't have all the characters yet developed because we haven't needed them. They don't explain an essential concept.
Yeah. And I don't know why this just popped in my head, but do you remember the old Tim Allen show? Was it called Tool Time or something?
Home Improvements, yeah.
Home Improvement, right. And he's got the neighbor who you never see, right? All you see is the hat. And I thought, yeah, that's like one of those elements. You never really see it, but you know it's there.
Yeah.
That's funny. Yeah, Home Improvement. Oh, that takes me back. Anyway.
Me too.
So how do you come up with these stories? I mean, this is a very creative process to create a narrative around these things. I know you said you've been doing it for kind of 25 years. So, but what's a kind of a classic example of a story that you came up with to teach a particular concept?
The stories come from things I'm interested in that are outside of the traditional world of science. I really want the stories to be stories. I want anybody to be able to pick up one of my comic books and read it for the joy of the story. And then there'll be some chemistry learned along the way. So the story and the character development is really important for me. I have been through quite a few workshops, seminars, you name it, for children's literature. So I have basically gone back and enrolled myself in as much formal training in children's literature as possible, because I knew that something, writing a good story was really important to this. So I've learned a lot in that process and read quite a ton of children's literature. I read all the Judy Blume books, reread some of them. And you just get yourself in the space. So my story writing, say, for example, The Vanishing Van Gogh is the fourth comic book. It's a mystery. And so Starry Night is a painting that's fading. In the late 1990s, I taught a course with an art historian and a mathematician called The Science and Math of Art. And I learned a lot about how paintings were restored and the chemistry of restoring paintings and how they were authenticated. And that's just something that I always had an interest in art and particularly that. So I thought, well, if I can show how the pigments in Van Gogh's Starry Night are fading over time and how they could be restored. And then they have a rock concert to benefit the Vanishing Van Gogh. And there's like just some of my goofy humor in there too. So they really just come from a space of, I call it purposeful daydreaming, where you're kind of deliberating on all these things you know, and how could this come into a story? And I write a little, I lay down, I close my eyes a little. I'm often telling my students the answers are behind your eyelids. So I practice the same thing myself when I'm creating. The answers are under my eyelids, and find them there instead of the screen.
Yeah, no, that's good. I agree. Creative inspiration comes usually when you walk away from the computer and do something else. Yes, I go for walks and nature, and or go watch a cooking show, or who knows, right? Anything can stimulate something, and you get thinking, oh yeah, that's how you solve that problem. Yeah. Have you tackled climate change? So do you have stories that talk about sequestering carbon and the importance of trees and that sort of thing? Is that
it's coming. Yes.
Oh, coming.
So yes,
okay.
It's very important to me. And one component of climate change, well, a couple, carbon footprints, one of the first thing that comes to mind, only because when I'm talking with literally my college students, not the fourth graders that I'm working with, when I'm talking with college students about climate change, and I have seen had conversations with college students when they're talking about a carbon footprint, really think it's like a sooty footprint on the ground. and they're taking organic chemistry with me.
Oh my.
So it's very illuminating to me. And again, this is no fault of anybody's, but I think as scientists, we take for granted that everyone knows what a carbon footprint is, when right. In fact, almost no one knows what it is. And so it's a term that's thrown around very loosely and completely misunderstood. It's a little bit like the emperor's new clothes. There's a lot of that going on where there's not a head nodding and saying that the terminology, but not any understanding of how methane differs from carbon dioxide and what other structures are. So I'm going to put that in, that is being put into a story. The other component of climate change that is critical and that will probably be a series in itself is water. Water is one of the most complex systems we have. And yet again, it's just something that everybody thinks they know everything about. And yet when I teach units on pH, this is where the wheels come off. Like nobody can, pH goes away because all of a sudden you're taking the negative log of H plus concentration and blah, blah, blah. And there's equilibrium and there's kinetics and there's thermodynamics with water. And there's solubility issues with water. There's so much with water. And every time water is introduced into a conceptual question in chemistry, my students just dive bomb. And I really need to tackle water because, right, water is everything when we're talking about climate change. It's a big part of it, at least.
Yeah. Well, I just spent some time on a cruise ship. And I'll tell you, it renews your an appreciation for the vastness of the amount of water on this planet. It's, yeah, just staring out to sea. You're out there for, days on end crossing an ocean. It's, yes, it really makes you think about the composition of the planet and the importance of those water systems. So that's great. It's great. How many schools, about how many students, you're targeting kind of fourth grade right there in that, I guess that's kind of a sweet spot for your materials. How many students have been exposed to it at this point?
That's a good question. It's something I don't have a great handle on because of my publisher, Hewitt Learning. I'll give them a shout out. They're amazing. Mm-hmm. I couldn't say enough great things about when you have a great publisher, helps you really let an idea blossom. That's amazing. They're taking orders and sending stuff out without me knowing, which is also by design because I need to write and they need to do that part. So yeah. I couldn't even venture to guess. I know that locally, I would say about a dozen schools here locally. I occasionally hear from people who are using them and go on Zooms with them as well, but I don't have a great number.
All right. So that was also one of the questions I had was, is this and a standalone, a kid can just get this comic book and go through it on their own, or does it require integration? into curriculum with a teacher, kind of taking you through, or is it just better if your teacher's kind of incorporating it into the classroom? What's the best approach there with these materials?
It's a great question. I designed them to be standalone because I'm a first generation college student. So this isn't something that my parents could have, you know, they wouldn't have taught me chemistry. They had high hopes that I would, I'm a really good typist because they sent me to secretarial school. So I was supposed to become a secretary, or I guess an administrative assistant is the correct word now. Nonetheless, I'm mindful of that, right? I don't expect teachers, parents, anyone to really pick this up and get excited about it. The people that get excited about it are 10-year-olds. So it was designed for that child to be able to pick up. And there's the puzzles and activities and games that are included with it. And so it's more helpful if you have other kids around to at least play the games with or do the puzzles with. And certainly an adult could help orchestrate that. That said, by picking up the comic book and reading the comic book in a quiet corner, which I've seen lots of kids do, is really, for me, that's the huge win right there. They have a love of reading. They don't want to stop reading. They're laughing out loud to the characters. None of our books are available in a digital format. So they ask me if we're in the after-school program. They crawl under a tree or under a jungle gym and just read, or under a desk if we're inside, or they find quiet corners to read. So for me, I think the power of this, what I've designed, is that comfort, right? Let's just take a book and get comfortable. Read it in the back of a car on a long trip or on the way to soccer practice. And so when I was envisioning this, these are all the kind of scenarios I wanted. I wanted it not to be a sterile environment. I wanted it to be joyful reading and joyful learning concomitantly.
Yeah. How long does it take, investment of time, for a fourth grader to go through one comic book generally?
You know, it depends, Eric, on how they approach it. I'll give you all the different scenarios. If it's used, I have a 108-page lesson plan, right? So I have every 10 minutes of a teacher's day planned for the comic book series. So it's there are 36 40-minute lessons in this lesson plan book.
Okay.
So it's about a 12 hours of full-on activities, games, puzzles, reading guides, all of that. So one comic book in a school setting is roughly about 12 hours worth of contact time. So however long that is, if you have science twice a week, you know, however long that is. So that's one scenario. If I take a group and I do some informal learning where we're playing periodic table baseball, or we're playing the card game Ionic Ooze, and then reading some, one comic book takes about probably 4 hours to 5 hours with it, just really informal. And then I know this afternoon I'm going to go up to another school where the boys are blowing through them in an afternoon, like one comic book, but they're not doing the puzzles and activities and games. So they're not doing the enrichment activities. They're just blowing through the stories because they want to blow through the stories. And I love that. I don't have a preference for any of those scenarios, but their time commitment is very different depending on what you want to use them for.
Yeah. So let's say I'm a fourth grader and I go through this, let's say in 12 weeks or something, through, you know, a classroom experience. And now I'm all excited. I'm more literate now as a result of the curriculum. How do we fill that gap from there? Because now they may not get chemistry until 10th grade, if they even take it in high school. So, you know, doesn't it fall away? You're not going to retain that.
Yeah. This is awesome topic and question, and something that also gives me great trepidation. I recognize this right from the get-go. I had a couple of students locally before the comic books were published pilot this with me, and they were super excited. I mean, they wanted more and more and more. And, you know, we took it further, and we were doing some science fair projects. I was teaching them more, and they wanted more. what I would suggest is a fourth grader who finishes Kids Chemical Solutions and is molecularly literate, I would encourage them to take one of these online courses through OutSchool or through, I don't know, any of the platforms, Khan Academy, whatever. Yeah. You know, you're ready for the next level, and look at it like an activity or, you know, almost like a sport. You're not doing it for a grade, you're doing it to enrich, to keep going in that. So
yeah,
there are, at that point, they can go more into some formal education. So lose the stories and the characters. They'll leave those behind, but hopefully they'll bring them with them in their imagination as well.
Yeah. Are you partnering at all with any, I know there's some groups that create kind of lab fun, you know, home chemistry activities, right, that kids can do at home. Are you partnering with any of those folks or looking at how you might tie into those or co-brand with them so they kind of leverage some of your storytelling into their lab kit, fun home chemistry experiment stuff?
I would love to. I've been hoping for that. Our first book came for sale in October 2022. So we're fairly new. And I think people are waiting to see what we're doing. But I've reached out to quite a few of those companies. I would really love to. I think that would be a great match. Yeah, that's the dream, right? To have a wider distribution through things that make sense together.
Well, and I'm thinking of extending, right? It's that extension of it, right? Once you get them excited, now, you know, give them some more hands-on stuff and something else to start bridging that gap so they're seeking out more of it before they get to high school. Yeah. Cool. Have you considered so I've come from the video game industry. So, you know, anytime you start talking about narratives and these kind of experiences, you know, I think about how could you take those narratives and turn them into an interactive online activity, whether it's gamified or whatever you want to call it. But stories is a major component. And the hardest part of creating learning games is creating that narrative. And if you've already got narratives, I'm just curious if you've talked to anybody in the learning game space about possibly turning some of these into a video game format.
Yeah, I have spoken with quite a few folks at the level of conversation and interest. And I agree with you. I think it's a natural extension of what I'm doing. I think getting our characters somewhat into augmented reality or the metaverse or something like that would be just phenomenal. So I do have dreams for that. I've got ideas for it also that go with it. I think the biggest thing is the expense that goes with that kind of production. And again, my sense is I think that folks are still a little, I mean, you know, nobody likes chemistry. I mean, right? So it's a tough, everyone loves what I'm doing. They're excited. And I've had a couple companies say to me, I don't know if I can sell this because it's branded as chemistry, right? And so the branding for chemistry in the game world is they're expected to, you know, grab a beaker off a shelf and pour it into something, it turns a color. And my stories aren't anything like that. Not one story happens in a laboratory. Yeah. The chemistry is integrated very subtly and profoundly into the story without it being in your face. So, I mean, there are plenty of ideas for games. And if anyone's listening and wants to partner with me, I'm open for it.
Well, I will make an introduction. One of the other guys who's been a guest on my show, he had such a similar kind of interest in this. So he's from the video game industry, but he realized that physics was one of those things too. Anybody in engineering needed to study physics, and you had this 50, 60% failure rate.
Yes.
And it was forcing a lot of people to change degree programs because they couldn't get through physics. So he created it's like a AAA video game that teaches, not physics, it was calculus. So, so he created a video game that teaches calculus. And,
wow.
And they've done, you know, very, very well with it. I do agree it's expensive, it's taken time, but But anyway, I will introduce you to this guy because
he has the
ability, and he has a, they created a company. It's actually through, it was through Texas A&M, although he's recently moved. He just moved to Switzerland here a couple months ago. So I assume the company is still intact and the resources to take on projects like that. But with an Emmy there and, you know, the right kind of investors, maybe you could start doing something. Because again, I think you've probably done the hardest part is the narratives and the character, you know, creation, that that creative part is really, really the challenge in trying to teach a topic like this and make it fun and engaging. Now, his courses, his games are geared towards university level or high school. You do, you know, the calculus in high school as well. He's also got one, you talked about the art piece. He has one that does art history as well. So it teaches art history through a video game. Very, very cool stuff. He's an amazing guy. His name is Andre Thomas. You can look up that episode in my list. One of the first ones that I did. Yeah, it's a two-parter on my conversation with him about the work that he's done. And well, I just think it's another medium, right? It wouldn't take away from the comic book experience, like you say, that, you know, sitting under a tree or, you know, wherever you are, you can read it. I love that. But an interactive, the other thing that's really, really cool about the interactive stuff is the data you can collect.
Yes, right? I agree.
Because you have that kind of constant, I can see how much time you're spending here. What decisions did you make? Did you go here? Did you go there? And so you can also have branching storytelling too, right?
Yeah.
You can have them make decisions that guide the story. And so so that it becomes really, really interesting to see. And you talked about kind of the games and the puzzles, right? You incorporate them right in. So in order to advance the story, you have to solve the puzzle. No, that seems like it could be very interesting. The other thing that occurred to me is I got thinking about Pokemon, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, kids, and in fact, actually, Andre did a TED talk, and one of the examples he gave was he showed the periodic table and said, you know, we all, our eyes roll back in our heads. We go, oh my God, this is so painful. Don't talk to me about the periodic table. You know, trying to memorize it and understand it is just so painful for all of us. Then he put up this graphic that was so big, so detailed, you couldn't possibly read it. And he said, this is Pokemon. Ask any 10-year-old and he can tell you, you know, hundreds and hundreds of characters and describe their abilities and the combinations and all this stuff about these Pokemon just simply because they play the game, right?
Right.
And so to me, it's kind of the same thing, right? And there's, I actually looked it up today. There's over 1,000 Pokemon characters, right? And I guarantee most of these kids who play, you know, are familiar with hundreds of them. And,
right.
And so to create hundreds of characters that teach chemistry, if you've got a kid who's engaged and they want to, you know them, play them, whatever, you know, you should be able to get them there, hundreds of them. Anyway, it's an interesting comparison, I think.
I'm inspired. I definitely want to meet Andre, so that'll be great.
We should definitely get you guys together. All right. What else are you involved in? Any other, I mean, not like this isn't enough, but do you do any other work around education and innovation?
We're also creating an animated series. I just got back from a convention called Kidscreen. That was last week where we met in San Diego. It's a global convention of children's media, basically. So, you know, Nickelodeon's there, all the big players in children's media and television and movies and somewhat games too. Not a ton of games were there. It was mainly the other kind. But we have a series. We have a trailer produced. We have some scripts written, and this would be for a younger audience, five to nine-ish. So there's a little bit of crossover. But to your point about the games, is that, you know, molecular literacy as an entity needs to go out in all formats. You know, the comic books are one format. My games and puzzles are another format. A video game, for lack of a better term, is another format. that's possible. And this animated series, I love because we can, again, that's something that a parent can just put on, walk away from, and the child can begin learning. So the characters are slightly different. It's not the same set of characters in the animated series because we wanted to have kind of connection with the younger audience. Our characters in the comic books are teen-like. So we just created different comics or different characters. So fingers crossed on that. Again, very expensive. We need funding, all of the above. So yeah, these initiatives are not for the faint of heart.
No. Yes. No, you have to be brave and persistent and patient and, you know, all of those things. And, you know, one of the things that I'm seeing a lot of now is I've been doing this podcast, which, by the way, I'm just starting season two. So you will be part of season two. Is the problem of isolation, I guess, is the way I would put it. I see so many people doing really, really clever and important and great work, but then they're kind of doing it in isolation. And so I really want to, you know, people like you, and there's so many people with other ideas out there and possibly with other resources to be able to help you say, right, how do I connect people together now? I'm glad you're doing the podcast. I hope you're getting out there everywhere, right? Tell your story, and that this, you know, Emmy really helps elevate that awareness of what you're doing, so we can, you know, get funding and say, again, not to dwell on the Pokemon thing, but, you know, card games, right? You had to collect the cards, right? Like baseball cards, Pokemon cards. You know, my own son, I remember having to go out every weekend and buy another set of Pokemon cards because he was looking for this one or that one. And, you know, the trading the cards and stuff. It seems like this would be, you know, another potential avenue of getting the kids really interacting and thinking about, oh, I need these two cards, right, to combine to make this new compound, and playing the game and kind of battling each other, or whatever, this compound beats that compound. It's kind of like rock, paper, scissors, right? Right.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
this one beats
that
one, but that one beats this one. And, you know, and that's exactly how Pokemon works, right? Is there's all these different advantages, disadvantages, and you've got to know what everybody's strengths and weaknesses are in order to play the game. And you evolve them, and, you know, all these things. So anyway, it just seems like there's so much you can do, and you've clearly got the creativity. That's what impresses me most about your story, Colleen, is that, you know, you're this chemistry teacher who came up with these stories. And, you know, that's also a part of the kind of the theme I'm seeing, is there's real creativity out there. There are so many ideas about how to improve education, how to break through these problems where people, you know, don't get it, or say they just have a mindset that, oh, I don't do chemistry. Oh, I don't do math.
Yeah.
I hate this just from the word chemistry, right? They say people who are, say, don't even want to talk to you because you're talking about chemistry. This is crazy. The world is made this way, right? Now, I'm a good one to talk, right? I haven't taken a chemistry class since the 70s. I ended up in IT and technology, but my brother, you'd love my brother. He taught at the University of Loyola in pharmacology, but his PhD is in something like cellular chemistry. Ion channels and stuff that goes right over my head. But he made a living, basically a lifetime, doing, you know, research really in chemistry. So, you know, this is super, super important. And we do need a lot more people to be literate, as you call it. So, all right, what else do you want to add? Anything we haven't talked about you want to share?
No, the main thing is, I just want to encourage anyone who's listening, just give it a try. Even if you had a bad experience before, I say cheekily on my website that my comic books are for kids ages 8 to 108. Because I want to recapture all those people who had a bad experience, or thought they weren't good at it, or thought they didn't understand it, or didn't think it was interesting. I'd like to encourage those. And one thing that I love about the comic books is they could lead to intergenerational learning. So if a parent is reading to a child, or a caregiver is reading to a child, or a second grade or a third or fourth grade teacher is putting it in their curriculum, they're learning too. I don't expect anyone who picks up my comic books to already know it. They most likely don't. I know most of the world doesn't know this.
Right.
And so be open to learning something new through something that could be fun and engaging, and see where it takes you, and see how that alters your perspective on the world and how we understand each other. So yeah. I think there's some power in that. And I really just want a call to action of people to try it again if you've had a bad experience.
Yeah. Well, and you know, there's so many, I think, practical places where it ties into. I mean, you just think about skincare products and foods, right? And you look at the, you know, list of ingredients and stuff, and you're seeing these, you know, these names that are, you know, 18 characters long. And you're like, what the heck is that? And why is it in my food, right? You know, a bit more molecular literacy, and maybe I could actually look that thing up and understand what it is and why it's in there and whether I should care that, you know, these preservatives or colors or whatever are in my products and what does it mean and, you know, how does it work? I think all of us would be better off knowing more about these things and say how they work in our bodies and in the products we use, you know, all around us. So yeah, that's, I love practical learning. That's another thing too. I loved about when I first saw your video is you talked about the stories don't take place in the lab, right? Yeah. None of them take place in a lab. And I really love that. I think that's so important for all of this is we get kids out of the idea that chemistry only happens, you know, in a lab, as you say, with beakers and fluids that change color or fizz and whatever, right? Yeah, it's way more than that. So awesome. Any last words?
No, just thank you so much. It was really a pleasure talking with you today.
All right. The show, the PBS special, is that available somewhere online? We can watch that documentary?
Yeah, I have a YouTube channel. So if you go to my website, it's on the bottom of my website. So kidschemicalsolutions.com. It's on the bottom of that. And then the link to our YouTube channel is also Kids Chemical Solutions.
Okay. All right. I think I did watch it, but I didn't realize that was the one that was awarded the Emmy, maybe.
Yeah.
Okay. Great. Well, thank you. And I will definitely have a link in the show notes for your site.
Okay. Great. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Colleen.
All right. Bye. Bye-bye.
This podcast is all about the search for examples of innovation in education. And today we heard from Colleen Kelly, who teaches college-level chemistry to fourth graders using storytelling and comic books. Born out of her frustration, working with so many students over the years at the university who were aspiring to be doctors but had to give up their dreams because they couldn't get through a college chemistry course. And she realized that she couldn't fix it at the university level after all those decades. She realized that she had to go back to younger students and establish the foundation for learning so they'd be prepared to take a college chemistry course. And so she used her storytelling to develop these comic books. And well, she's been incredibly successful at this, but it wasn't lost on me that, you know, she went at this like a true professional. She studied children's literature. She spent time in classrooms and one-on-one with these younger students, trying out her stories and her materials and developing supplemental materials and reading guides and games and puzzles that go along with what she's developing. And then she applied her years of experience in learning science to the assessment of this to know if she was really achieving this level of what she calls molecular literacy in these younger students. And she clearly has been extremely successful at it. It's bringing stories like this to my listeners that it's why I do this podcast. And so I hope you're enjoying it. I hope you want to hear more of these stories because I've got more. They're coming. And you know, I'm building a community here. I do this for you guys, and I want you to join me as we try to get education into the 21st century. That's what we're here for. So again, I'm Eric Byron. Thank you for listening to the Education Innovators Podcast. And to all of you innovators and education out there, thanks for what you're doing. You are making a difference.